Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Luke San, and today is Monday, May 22nd, 2017. I know it's been a kind of sporadic couple of weeks for the show, but we are finally getting back into groove. I'm trying to get back into my routine of recording every day. You know, it's something that you get pretty used to, and then other stuff comes up and you don't do it a lot for a few weeks, and now it's not exactly habit anymore. But we're going to get back into it. We're going to start having episodes every day like normal. I am finally through with my semester, and then last week I drove a full 3,200 miles across the country from New York to LA, and now I am finally home recording in my parents' house for the summer. So, without much more introduction, let's get going. As you guys know, if you listened last week, I did two episodes of exit interviews. On Monday, we talked about the prospects and third string players. On Tuesday, we talked about most of the backups, and then starting Tuesday through the weekend, I was traveling. So now we're back today on Monday, kind of doing exit interviews for the starting lineup. And then as we get going later this week, we will do some more kind of off-season preview stuff. This will, I think, for the most part, be our last or one of our last episodes fully dedicated to looking back at the 2017 season that was. So as we get rolling, the first guy that I want to talk about, even though he's probably one of the more important guys, so you might think he would go later, is Blake Griffin. So Blake had kind of a simultaneously exciting and disappointing season. You know, on one hand, we saw him for stretches, when he was healthy, be the dominant player that we know he can be. And on a whole, you know, his numbers were very good. 22 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. There still aren't very many guys in the NBA who are giving you 22 points, 8 rebounds, and 5 assists, and Blake Griffin is one of them. Especially from the power forward position, getting that passing is a big, big plus. We also saw him step up his shooting in ways that we had really never seen before. For the season, he shot 34% from 3, but down the stretch, I believe, once he came back from that knee injury in late January, early February, I think he shot like 37% down the stretch of the season. Really, really proficient from behind the arc, and that was really encouraging to see. But then we have the drawbacks that I think are the same things we've kind of known or noted as weaknesses or feared would be weaknesses. Talking about things like defensive engagement, he tends to kind of float around. He's not always really tuned in. We saw a lot of, even in the playoffs, some possessions where he like was never really got into the play defensively and just kind of hung out around the three-point line instead of getting in to get a rebound or a loose ball. And then the injuries. And you hate to hold injuries against a guy, and I'm not sure to what extent we should hold Blake Griffin's injuries against him. But it's something you have to talk about. You have to at least note that Blake had a knee injury that caused him to miss 21 games this season, and then he had a toe injury in the playoffs that caused him to miss everything after Game 3 of that first-round series against the Utah Jazz. Now, this comes after a year in 2016 when he only played 35 games because of a quad injury and the broken hand from that fight with the team equipment manager. And then when he came back at the end of the 2016 season, of course, he re-aggravated that quad in Game 4 against the Trailblazers and went out for the rest of the playoffs. So we're really looking back to the 2015 season, 2 full years ago, when Blake was healthy throughout the postseason and was dominant against the Spurs and then Houston Rockets. He played 67 games that season, so he still missed 15, but not horrible. Before that season, he was almost perfect. 82 games his rookie year. He played all 66 games in the shortened lockout season his second year, and then 80 and 80 after that. Of course, in his original rookie year after being drafted, he missed the full season with knee surgery, so his second season ended up being technically his rookie year. Now, it's a lot to digest. You know, you see those four seasons from 2011 to 2014, he got beat up in the playoffs because the games get physical and intense, and it happens, but he missed 4 games in 4 years from 2011 to 2014. In 2015, he missed 15 games. In 2016, he missed 47 games and got injured in the playoffs. And then now this season in 2017, he's missed 21 games and been injured in the playoffs. So the question with Blake Griffin isn't, is he good enough for a max contract this summer? Because he's absolutely good enough. 22 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, no brainer. The question for the Clippers is, assuming that they aim to keep Chris Paul and maximize this Chris Paul window, is giving this many resources to a guy who seems to be consistently getting injured in Blake Griffin a good idea? Now, you can ask the same question for Chris Paul, who, of course, has always had injury struggles. You're trying to win a championship. You know, these guys are good. There's no question about that. But are they going to stay healthy? Because if they're going to stay healthy and they're not going to help you in the playoffs because they're out, then what's the point? And we'll probably have a little more in-depth discussion on that and the pros and cons of re-signing Blake as the offseason wears on. But just for now, you know, I think it's definitely something to consider. Blake is definitely good enough to get a max contract, and he's going to get it from someone. I mean, Chandler Parsons got a huge deal from Memphis last summer. But from the Clippers' perspective, what they have to be thinking is it worth it for us to commit $30 million to a guy who, in the last 2 years, has only played, you know, less than 100 games in 2 years combined and gone out for the playoffs in the first 3 or 4 games both years? It's a dilemma. Now, moving on, I want to talk about a couple of shooting guards. So first we'll do Austin Rivers, and then we'll talk about JJ Redick, and we'll talk about a lit, you know, comparing and contrasting, I suppose, because Austin Rivers could be replacing JJ Redick as the Clippers starting shooting guard next season, pending JJ's free agency. So Austin had by far the best season of his career. 12 points, 3 assists, 2 rebounds off the bench, all career highs, and then 44% from the field is a career high, 37% from deep is a career high. Great season for Austin. There were stretches when he had to be a fill-in starter at point guard, at shooting guard, at small forward. There were times when he was the team's leading scorer and times when he had to accept like an eighth man role behind Jamal Crawford and Mo Spates. So I was really impressed with Austin this season. I actually think for how great his year was, he could have had a better season if he had a more consistent role. And that's not necessarily anybody's fault. It's not, you know, Doc's fault that Chris Paul was injured and that Austin had to be the fill-in point guard. But then when JJ Redick was hurt, Austin was the fill-in shooting guard. And then when Blake Griffin was hurt, Luke Mbamute slid to power forward. Austin played small forward at times. And then sometimes he was coming off the bench. So it's not anybody's fault, but it's just he seemed to have his down stretches of the season when he was transitioning from one role to another. And then unfortunately his season, the end of his season, was kind of marred by that hamstring injury. He missed, I believe, the last 7 or 8 games of the Clippers season. And then almost all of their first-round series against the Jazz. He missed the first four games. He came back for Game 5 but was significantly hobbled. And then in Games 6 and 7 was a little more himself, but definitely not what we've come to expect from Austin Rivers in the playoffs, where he has had some... You know, I noted this before the playoffs began. In every series since Austin Rivers joined the Clippers, there has been an Austin Rivers game. A game that he took over. Beginning in that first round series against the Spurs a couple years ago, where he was like 7 of 8 from the field for 16 points in a short stretch and just completely swung a game. Then he had those huge games against Houston. He had that Game 6 against Portland last year when Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were both out and Austin was the team's best player and almost led them to victory in Portland without Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. This season he didn't get a chance to step up to the plate like that because of the injury, which was definitely unfortunate, but he still had a strong performance in Game 6. 13 points, 4 rebounds, 5 of 10 from the field, 3 of 7 from deep. But it just wasn't the same. And he didn't, because of that late season injury, he didn't get a chance to have that big impact that, you know, we probably would have liked to see come in one or two playoff games. Now, his counterpart, the starting shooting guard, is J.J. Redick. And J.J. Redick is almost like the opposite of Austin Rivers. Austin doesn't do a lot of things. He doesn't really do any one thing exceptionally well. 37%, he's a solid shooter. He can make a simple pick and roll pass, but he is not a point guard in that sense. He has a nice handle, but again, he's not really a point guard. You don't want him out there as your sole ball handler. He's a solid defender, but that's always been as a sub. You don't know if you can really slide him in against the superstars in the starting lineups of the NBA. And he has like a length and athleticism and youth that allows the Clippers to slide him across multiple positions. J.J. Redick is the opposite. He doesn't defend very well at this point in his career. He is not a ball handler or distributor at all. He has no positional versatility as far as being able to slide to small forward or point guard because he doesn't have the handle for point guard and he doesn't have the size to play small forward at just 6'4". But he is maybe the best off-ball shooter in the NBA. What I mean by that is you can't call him the best shooter in the NBA anymore because of Steph Curry's emergence with that off-the-dribble jump shot that is almost unguardable. But as far as coming off of curls and doing more than just spacing the floor, because spacing the floor implies you're standing in the corner and the defense has to pay attention to you. J.J. Redick provides more than space. He provides gravity. So when he comes off of these screens, the entire defense, the whole floor, is pulled towards him. Because you have to send extra help to him on that curl, which means someone has to come hedge DJ on that roll after he sets that screen, and that leaves other guys on the other side of the floor open, which helps the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin pick and roll operate. So it's more than just spacing, it's gravity, which is not something that a lot of guys bring. But the best shooters in the NBA bring that spacing. They pull one guy towards them. One guy has to stay on them and not give them an open shot. But not a lot of guys bring that whole gravity where the entire offense can be centered around their off-ball movement. Now, the problem with J.J. Redick is he's a free agent. And he's going to be turning 33 coming up here in June. And he declined this year. He took a step backwards. All of those weaknesses that I pointed out regarding his, basically his size and versatility, were, in my opinion, more exposed this season than in prior years. He struggled more than, you know, he's never been a quick guard to guard the likes of CJ McCollum or Bradley Beal. But it seemed like he struggled a little more in that aspect than normal. And he's never been a tall guard to play against guys like Klay Thompson. But again, it seemed like he struggled more in that aspect than in years past. And in the area of things that he does well, his three-point percentage, which had increased every year as a Clipper, dropped this season. So his first year as a Clipper, he shot 39.5%, then 43.7%. Then last year, he led the league at 47.5%. This year, he was down to 42.9%. Now, 42.9% from three is very, very, very good. The problem isn't the number, it's the trend. And it could be an outlier year. Again, it's only one season. And with Chris Paul missing some time this year, Blake Griffin missing some time this year, it's entirely possible that JJ just wasn't getting the same type of looks. There are points in the season where he definitely was not getting the same types of looks. But it is most definitely concerning for a guy who's at this age, 33, whose weaknesses are his athleticism, that the athleticism seems to be creeping up on him. And you have to ask, at what point is it made or missed shots, or is it that he's not getting the same quality of looks because he's not getting the same separation from these longer, younger defenders who are on him? Now, JJ is probably going to demand something like $18 million a year as a free agent this summer. And it would most likely be unwise for the Clippers to offer that money. It just would, I don't think it's a good idea. And so as much as it hurts, I think the Clippers should probably start shifting towards either moving Austin Rivers into the starting lineup or looking for someone else. Because as Chris Paul continues to get older and need a little more help defensively and a little more help handling the ball, you need someone who does more on the floor than J.J. Redick does. It's not good enough to be a great three-point shooter. Maybe if the Clippers had that in a small forward, but at shooting guard, they need someone who can help Chris out defensively, which J.J. can't do. They need someone who can help Chris out as a secondary ball handler, which J.J. can't do. And, you know, they need to be smart with their resources. And I don't think $18 million a year for 3 years on J.J. Redick would necessarily qualify as smart. Now, buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time, and it's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to. And none of the other ticket sites want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, and click Add a Promo Code. Enter promo code LOCLIPPERS, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LOCLIPPERS today. Now, in this backstretch of the episode, we'll talk about the last two players who we have not done exit interviews for yet, who are Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan. Now, first, let's talk DeAndre Jordan. So, DeAndre Jordan, first team All-NBA last season. He goes and wins a gold medal as a starting center for the Olympic team. He comes back this season. It was announced last week that DeAndre Jordan was third team All-NBA, which I don't think is necessarily unsurprising. It's not like he was a landslide winner last year, and he was essentially identical statistically this season, 12.7 points, 12.7 points, 13.8 rebounds, 13.8 rebounds. And that's what, you know, voters tend to look for in a center. But I think it has more to do with reputation than anything. And while DeAndre Jordan has a good reputation, there are other guys who are coming up. Anthony Davis, you know, obviously a young guy who had a healthy year this season. You know, DeMarcus Cousins, Andre Drummond, Karl Anthony Towns. It's not like it's DeAndre head and shoulders above everybody else. And there's probably two things worth noting here. First is that only one center makes the All-NBA first team. It's not like forwards and guards. So you have to be considered the best center in the league. But also, if there wasn't a requirement for a center to make the All-NBA first team, then no one ever would. Because you've got really, really talented guards and forwards who are considered pretty much universally to be more valuable than their center counterparts, who are bumped to second and third team, or even left off altogether because there's the requirement for a center to be on the All-NBA teams. But either way, you know, I noted this on Twitter the other day, DeAndre Jordan is very quietly now at the age of 28, he'll turn 29 this July, building a Hall of Fame resume. And you know, you might have like a knee-jerk reaction hearing those words at first next to DeAndre Jordan's name. But the NBA Hall of Fame is very inclusive. There's a lot of guys who you might say, really? He's in the Hall of Fame? That are in the NBA Hall of Fame. And DeAndre, you know, you look at what he's doing. He has an All-NBA first team. He has multiple all-defensive teams. He won a gold medal, and international play does count in a big way towards making the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's now been an NBA All-Star. He's led the league in field goal percentage 5 seasons in a row. He might finish his career as the all-time leader in career field goal percentage. I know there's a couple old-time centers who are up there with him. But, you know, DeAndre, yeah, he leads the NBA in career field goal percentage right now at 67.7%. And he actually has a pretty sizable lead over Tyson Chandler, who's second at 59.4%. So you look at kind of these records that he holds, his accomplishments, and depending on the class that he's eligible with, it's not so unreasonable that he could make it into the Hall of Fame. But just specifically talking about DeAndre Jordan's performance this season, I think it's kind of what we've come to expect from DeAndre. When he's tuned in, he can be dominant on both ends of the floor, but he does not maintain that level for 82 games a season. So there's a lot of times when he is making one play but not a second play. I talked about this a lot in the playoffs, where DeAndre will come help, but he won't help and then recover. He'll just help. And, you know, just helping is good. A lot of guys don't get that far who aren't good defenders. But for DeAndre to really set himself apart and make a huge impact on a game, he can't just be another cog defensively. He can't just be like, yes, this is my assigned role in the scheme. I come over and help, and it's over. What he has to do and what he does at times is bring that second effort, where he's helping but then getting back into the play with a second jump to block the shot once that dump-off pass goes. Or where he's jumping up to try to block a shot and he misses, and he has that second jump to go get a defensive rebound. And once we see that level of activity for DeAndre defensively, we start to see him get a little more engaged offensively. He dives to the rim harder, he elevates higher to finish those lobs, and he starts talking more, talking to his teammates. You know, he's a little bit of a trash talker too, and he leads the team defensively. He's like the quarterback back there calling out what's happening. That's when he's at his best. But we don't see it all the time. But still, I think DeAndre had a very strong season. And, you know, another thing that's worth noting with all of the Clippers' injury struggles is that he played 81 games this season. And DeAndre Jordan almost never misses games. Now, that's not to say, you know, he will never miss games, because injuries happen. But you just look at his career. Once he became a normal rotation player in his third season, 80 out of 82, 66 out of 66, 82, 82, 82, 77 out of 82, 81 out of 82. So he's missed, you know, by my quick count in the last 7 seasons, 8 games. 8 games in 7 seasons. That's remarkable. That's great. So, you know, that's something that I think is worth noting as value, is that he stays on the floor a lot, which not, you know, especially big guys tend to struggle with. So DeAndre has one more season on his contract and then a player option. I'm not sure what he's going to do with that player option yet. It'll depend, I guess, a lot on what the market is for centers this summer. So he's going to make $22.6 million this coming season. Then he has a player option for $24.1 million the season after. And depending on where we see guys sign this summer, we'll see if DeAndre stays with that $24 million or decides to enter free agency and seek more money. The last guy we're going to talk about is Chris Paul, the Clippers' leader and best player, who is terrifyingly a free agent this summer, although rumors are that he will return to the team. He has a player option for $24.27 million. He's going to decline that because he's going to get something like, if he re-signs with the Clippers, 5 years and over $200 million. So there's no reason for him to stay at that $24 million level. Now, as far as his performance goes, I think we see in this season the Chris Paul that we consistently see, which is that he is both dominant in the ways that he has always been, but also ever evolving his game as he ages. So we saw him, you know, it feels like he's handling the ball less and maybe deferring more to guys like Austin Rivers and Jamal Crawford to pace himself. He's definitely not taking on the challenging defensive assignments for 48 minutes a night for 82 games a year anymore. But his shooting continues to improve. He continues to be exceptionally crafty. And, you know, he's the team's best player. When you look at the on-off numbers for players around the league, the Clippers' difference between how good they are when Chris is playing and how bad they are when he is not is one of the biggest in the NBA. He couldn't mean, there's no one who means more to this team on the court than Chris Paul. So, you know, there isn't a lot to say about Chris Paul here, other than that he's really, really good and he's a free agent. And the Clippers absolutely need to do everything they can to re-sign him. It's to the point where, you know, I would give Blake Griffin a max contract. But that's about it. You go in, you tell him, okay, we're going to give you the maximum contract. Chris Paul, it's like, what else can you possibly give him? Well, Chris, who do you want us to sign? Chris, do you want a new coach? Chris, do you want a new GM? Almost letting Chris Paul play GM, which is not always a great idea when you let a star player kind of hold you hostage like that, but that's the reality of the situation where he's that good and that important that you make other decisions based around keeping him. So if Allen Anderson was really a helpful presence in the locker room, you re-sign Allen Anderson, even though he didn't help too much on the court. If Chris Paul likes Doc Rivers, you keep Doc Rivers even if you weren't planning on it. If Chris Paul doesn't like Doc Rivers, you go get a new coach and let Chris Paul, you know, if not pick, at least advise your decision. Even if you're planning on keeping Doc Rivers, if Chris Paul wants him out, he's out. I think that's just, you know, whatever decision it comes time to make, the one that makes Chris Paul happy is the right decision. Now, there's a couple ways that Chris Paul's game is changing, like I said, and he's adapting to it as he ages. But I think when we get to these limitations with Chris Paul as he ages, we get to the main reasons why J.J. Redick isn't necessarily a great fit for this team anymore. So Chris Paul is obviously a small guy, undersized at just 6 foot, and he's going to be, you know, he just turned 32, so he'll be 32 for pretty much all of next season. He's slowing down defensively. His stamina isn't what it once was. And so the Clippers need more help as secondary ball handlers and guard defenders. And like I talked about before, J.J. Redick, one of the best shooters to ever play the game, but not a secondary ball handler and not able to defend those quick guards. So the Clippers need somebody at shooting guard who can hope, ideally both, but hopefully at least one. Either Chris Paul can defer to them. Like, if you remember when Chris Paul first came to the Clippers, he was playing with Chauncey Billups. he played a lot more off the ball and let Chauncey kind of be the floor general for stretches. And it helped Chris stay rested and fresh. If the Clippers can't get... I mean, I don't expect them to get that level of like a veteran point guard like Chauncey Billups, but even a guy like Austin Rivers, who can run the pick and roll and bring the ball up on a fast break and be a little more effective as a ball handler and distributor than J.J. Redick ever was. The Clippers also would like to find a guy to guard point guards, because there's so many young, quick point guards in the NBA now, not just Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry and John Wall and Damian Lillard, but even guys like Kemba Walker, that it's just a chore for Chris Paul to keep up with them all the time. And if the Clippers can get in certain matchups where they have a guy at shooting guard who you can put that guy on Russell Westbrook and let Chris Paul guard Andre Roberson, it just makes Chris's life so much easier. So those are a couple things to consider. You know, you're building a team around Chris Paul, and that's what the Clippers have been doing for years now, is building around Chris Paul. But as Chris Paul's game changes, the needs that you need to fill around him change. And I think those are a couple things that the Clippers need to look for this summer, are a guy to help with the ball handling and a guy to help with the defense. Now, that's going to do it for today's episode. Like I said, if you want to check out the other exit interviews reviewing the players' seasons, you can check out last week's two episodes from Monday and Tuesday, where I did the young players and the third string on Monday and the second string on Tuesday. You can also check out ClipsNation.com, where over the last 3 weeks, we've gone over all 15 players, different writers from the staff, each taking a player or two and kind of breaking it down in depth. And then as we move forward this week, we'll start talking more about off-season stuff, hypotheticals, who the Clippers can sign, what they should do. And so I encourage you guys who are listening to send me some feedback on Twitter at LucasJHand, emailing me lhand.clipsnation@gmail.com. Let me know what you want to hear about, players that you like as free agents that you think are interesting, trade ideas that you may have, what you think about what the Clippers should do with their own situation, with Doc Rivers, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, J.J. Redick, you know, all potentially could not be with the team next season. So how do you run it back? Do you change some things and reload? Do you blow it up and rebuild? And what path do you go down with those different options? So I'm looking forward to hearing from all of you. Looking forward to talking off-season in the coming weeks. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.